All right, we're live now. That was Sunday morning's service, and the report and the message was about to start. I'm here tonight, as I said, to do what I did the last time, just move on in faith. Came here tonight believing there are people out there that will fast and pray as you did the last time. And I will call the doctor tomorrow at noon and take another blood test. Report to you the results Sunday. They'll either be up or down. With enough faith, they'll be down. But I look over here. There's 45 reservations yet to go to reach the quota. And as I said Sunday night in the Shalom service, at another time I think it would have affected me. The devil always revisits and does the same thing until he finds it doesn't work anymore. As I said Sunday, the reason I stopped the miracle services, I frankly could not believe when God healed me of cancer and the next phase of Claire Grace's prophecies, the miracle phase. And we started the miracle services in faith, now called the Shalom service. And this congregation that moved out of King's House 1 because we burst the walls open, had to create the balcony, filled the little side room where the pews are, and had people sitting on the edge of the platform. Moved to this beautiful cathedral as the ultimate result of moving, that you could not and didn't care enough to support in faith that claiming of miracles. You know the prophecy that Claire Grace gave. That in these last days there would be a move of God and many tangential voices would raise up and lead people astray. And their ability to do that was the people's tendency to be gullible where miracles are present, and they would justify their tangential direction by miracles. The prophecy in some, I was in a terrible valley. She prophesied I'd come out of it. It'd get worse before it got better. I came out of it in one day, about approximately 3 to 4 months later. I would come to a place, having moved constantly in my ministry, from which I'd never move again. And after I came out of the valley, I thought I'd identified 4 or 5 places, including Faith Center, King's House 1. Third, God would take my voice as a steering voice worldwide in these last days, like a compass point, because it's rooted and grounded in the Word. I tried that. We tried it, King's House 1. I tried it trying to cover the world in airplanes and multiple conventions and conferences. But the sequence was out of the valley to a permanent place. Within a month after we moved to the cathedral downtown, it didn't happen when we went to Hope Street. When we went to the cathedral downtown, Within a month, God took us worldwide. While we were trying to get Secret Six going, God did an end run and took us around the world with the Russian transmitters and Nashville and other places. The next step, miracles, because she said the tangential voices would raise up, and to keep my steering voice, she used different words, but in a hearing phase, the tangential voices would justify their tangents by miracles. So God would add miracles to my ministry to counterbalance the tangential voices, because my ministry would remain rooted in the Word, not in Gene Scott, not in some spectacular so-called gift, not in sensationalism. The Word. There was one more phase to follow that. But I, in faith, seized upon the fact that my own miracle increased my faith, and that we could start the miracle phase as we broadcast the miracle and now the Shalom service worldwide. And your failure to get behind it, and the empty seats in King's House 1, like a echo of returning to 28 years ago, so discouraged me it shouldn't have. I confess it was wrong. But I quit having them. Tried to stimulate Yuba saying I wouldn't have another one until we had 1,000 reservations. Well, we had the reservations, but 1,000 people didn't show up. I would have bet this house, based on the past performance of this church, that King's House 1 would have been jammed Sunday night. It was far from it. But as I said, I'm going forward in spite of it, and the real core of our church was there Sunday night, the core of our church as it's represented here in Los Angeles. I would have sworn we'd have had a full house of Voices of Faith tonight. And I would have sworn we would have reached the quota of reservations by Sunday night. The devil knows what has discouraged me, so he revisits it, and no matter what I say to you, you become willing participants in not rising to the challenge. And since Sunday, up until the reason I intend to be here at 9 o'clock tonight, up until 25 minutes ago, I had a couple of old guard members stand in front of me with Craig Lamp and my wife and I trying to hear something out of their mouth that would explain the deliberate violations of trust since Sunday. My wife had to calm down, really, literally, calm down, make him go to another phone, and calm down one of the new people in the studio today. Doesn't matter what I say, I can't convince you of the nature of this battle and the nature of staff members who have gotten in the flesh. Do not put on the armor of God and epitomize the sons of Eli who didn't listen to their father because God wanted to kill them. Who epitomize those in Isaiah 6 that God sends Isaiah to, telling him they will not respond until all are cut down, but the purpose of Isaiah continuing to preach to them was to heap up wrath. I understand heaven and all of its dimensions, the hierarchy on the good side and the hierarchy of the devil and his demons, the devil still having access to the counsels of God, and a thorn in the flesh of the heavenlies until Michael throws him out in the book of Revelation, and all the heavenlies rejoice, and he's limited just to this earth in those last few years. But there's an audience to what God does. And for some strange reason, these people that he chose and selected, who didn't rise to the challenge, he wanted all heaven to know he was beyond fair. He didn't harden Pharaoh's heart at the outset. Pharaoh hardened his heart. Then God hardened Pharaoh's heart. He didn't come to Isaiah 6 until overabundance of mercy and forgiveness, as I preached in Romans, designed to bring metanoia, had been exhausted. But to the denizens of heaven, and to them when they wake up in hell, everybody would know God gave them more than enough chance. He took his spirit away from Saul. Saul could never get it back. You live through Romans 1, where I said the condition of sins described was the result of God's wrath, not the cause. He turned them over to a strong delusion. They believe a lie about themselves and are damned. Now, I'm on the last handful of Old Guard members, but since Sunday, it's been like living in a torture chamber if you care about anybody. We got one semi-old guard member that's night shift in the studio here. He knows the rules. You're sick, you don't come to work. You can't afford to spread the germs through the whole staff. If you're able to walk, you will come to the door, you stand outside, you announce you're sick. You're not going to get paid to go home. If you're well enough, you wear a mask and some gloves, and there's gardening and jobs to do that doesn't expose the workers. They know that. If you're sent home because you're sick, and I know it, and we can pray about it, you call in every day and report your progress. And they know they don't just come back to work. They announce their progress daily, and we make the decision of when they're ready to come back. This person did none of that. I'm not sure of this, but the evidence suggests up in the viewing room that he wasn't feeling too good the last night and was probably laying down up there before he decided to go home. I don't know that for sure. I know this. Every person who works here knows two sides of the fence. When somebody's removed from a position for whatever cause, there's jobs left undone. That's common sense. The person who leaves has the responsibility of his job to call and say, these are the things I was doing, and I want to be sure they're being done. I had a Jewish staff member that had an alcohol problem, and I dismissed him until he went to rehab. But even during the years that he was, and he wasn't hired to be a Christian, he was Jewish. Even during the years he was a drunk, I'll give him this. When he was sent home, suspended, fired, or whatever, he would call relentlessly about the things that he was doing that he felt was being left undone if he didn't call. Everybody knows you move somebody on the side of those that are still here, you are to inquire. The body's gone. What was the body doing that might be left undone? And the one who goes, I set the example. I was given 3 minutes against protest of the doctors, and my security kept the doctors out of my room while I preached the 45-minute message from the hospital bed after my heart surgery. Nobody had to tell me who's going to fill the pulpit on Sunday morning. But this person goes home. It may seem like a little thing, but they add up in every area. We have new people here that don't know all the routines. It was his responsibility. He's the only one that's done it, and the new people are not yet trained. To put in the PO for the weekly supply of tapes that are necessary for us to have a service on the weekend. He never called. And the PO didn't get in. Oh, we've rescued it, but through no help from him. I should say my wife rescued it. One of the old guard members has never been released from maintaining the cameras at the ranch. Now it's time to tell you that I've shipped all but 6, and they're going out next week. My art got me in the horse business. We used it for a long time. It was wonderful exercise, and it was wonderful programming. But for Secret 16, I've been lightening the load. At the same time, I'm trying to free myself from the prison cells of people that no longer have their first love and shut down what are not vital arteries to the heart of this ministry. So there'll be no more horse programming. The horses are gone to Kentucky. They're being sold. And the final 6, Reddy Kilowatt was given away. He's blind and found somebody that would give him a home till he died. And the 3 Western and the 3 Hunters are being shipped separate ways this week or next week. And all the saddlebreds are gone. The trainers are gone. I'm in a full court press to bring the ranch to the best appearance it can. And Christie's is coming out tomorrow. I'm selling all my car collections for Secret 16. And I'm selling that ranch, as I did Kentucky. But nothing has changed in this person's responsibility to maintain the cameras that were part of TAC and had to be used every day in the filming of horses. But we're not filming horses now. So, goody, I don't have to say anything, I don't have to raise my hand. Just like so many things over these years, just let these cameras rot that are used to film the horses. Except yesterday, we gave an order. Mayor James Hahn wanted to see our Bible collection. And we set up a lunch. Now, when you're meeting the mayor or ordinary people in the business and political world, they have lunch at noon. And this same old guard member who's always had the responsibility of these cameras, who has been asked several times to just write a list of the things that are being left undone, was given the honor to help film this event as I conducted a guided tour with the mayor and his chief assistant through our whole Bible collection and then sat down to lunch. He was told to come ready, bring his suit, and told by Melissa to have two cameras so that one of the newer guys that just been trained could film. We'd have backup, and he's been filming for 15 years. Two cameras going. And that order says, film at all times. That's a given. If you've been watching the news, having a camera on all the time, maybe the only thing that'll save Michael Jackson's life. I sent a companion man where he was working. He was to bring, come with suit and everything, to follow us, go down there, film. 30 minutes before I'm going, we send his companion man in the yard to get down there and make sure the parking places are intact. That's cue enough. They need a cue. It's lunch. We come out to go, expecting him to follow. He's in his scrungy work clothes. Oh, I brought a suit, he said. Well, he wasn't ready. And he had a cue 30 minutes earlier when I sent the other person. These are just a little slice of things that I'm trying to tell you. Well, where's the camera? Well, I got it in my car. Guess what? One was in a camera case, which it's supposed to be. The other one was just in a box. No care, no acting professional. It has long been the rule of the camera people I train. I take cameramen with me when I go on a trip. They're to have batteries and films and check the cameras before they go. Like in a war, soldiers have to check their weapons. The camera people have been told repeatedly, don't you ever film something important without pausing for a few minutes and using your own viewfinder to make sure the camera's functioning properly and the film is proper. Well, we go down there, and here's the two cameramen filming. I think all the time. Until I discover that the know-it-all guy, the old guard guy, he did less than a 30-minute tape, and we were an hour and a half in the Bible tour and a luncheon together. And when I challenged why only one 30-minute tape, well, I didn't film the luncheon. Well, he stood right outside the door, and there was nothing more animated than filming the mayor and his aide and I having the discussion that we were having and the luncheon together. Well, the Bible tour was more than 30 minutes. Well, I had battery problems. You know why I had battery problems? Didn't check the batteries. They wouldn't hold a charge. And the camera was so faulty that every other frame, it seems, had a glitch in it. Unusable. And the backup camera used by the new guy The tape broke apart when they took it out of the camera. Because these cameras have not been looked at, serviced, or a word said about them for 2 or 3 months. And for an event that important, he not only wasn't dressed for it, did a halfway job, and this person knows he is supposed to carry a shoulder camera, a three-quarter or whatever it is, that he's a so-called expert at. And any time we had guests at the ranch, they would use the little Steadicam with more amateurish people, and he would carry the heavy shoulder camera with the battery pack slung on his shoulder. And I never even noticed, this is all finding out afterward, never even noticed. But he only raced up to the ranch and got a couple of Steadicams. And part of the stress that's been on me is this old guard, like a bunch of teenage sons that resent it when their father marries someone else and the tension is divided, have done everything in their power to set my wife up and make her, the first time she had to take over something, I went into the office once and found her shaking with sobs on the couch because nobody would even tell her, she had to learn making the mistake, nobody would help her. She doesn't have the 15 years I have. There's no way she would know that this person's supposed to have a minicam on his shoulder. But to get a minicam, he would have to hold up his hand and get permission to come to the studio. He wasn't about to do that. Shortcut's his method. So he went up and got two steadicams that he knows he's to service at least once a week, and he hasn't looked at them in at least 6 months, and they haven't been looked at by anybody for at least 3 months, and he grabs one in a box and another in a case and goes down. Tell me when we will ever do or ever have an occasion for me to conduct a guided tour through the Bible with the mayor of Los Angeles. Sorry, sir, I should have. His parents should have named him, should have, when he came out of the womb. Why don't you fire him? There's still four or five that are in places. That until I have gotten rid of some things that I accumulated through the years of ministry here, I went cash only. I was accumulating assets. I could have taken them and gone to South America. They were mine. I accumulated assets that would keep this ministry going if something happened to me. Well, I'm liquidating all but essentials. So I can get rid of the old guard completely. And I don't play games with them. I'm telling the world. I tell them to their face. The first person on this earth to see a genuine change will be me. But day in and day out, I get proven to me I got an Isaiah function with them. Can't make people care. Particularly when all they care about is themselves. They've tried all day. They may be able to splice and put together little small segments from the backup tape that broke as it came out, or one or part of both spinning past the glitches. But a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity was gone by old guard mentality. They wouldn't say a word. man didn't even have to take care of him. He just had to hold his hand up and say, this is what I used to do, and I want to remind you that someone needs to do it. I gave you two. A little one of a guy going home sick, feeling sorry for himself, and not making sure that his job was picked up while he was gone. I'll give you a third one. The devil knows I've made up my mind to sell the ranch. Maybe the most valuable piece of property we have. It takes preparation and time. It's got to be brought to pristine condition. And it's like the devil is setting out to see if he can destroy it before I can sell it. And the attack we've had on all these buildings everywhere, including last night's rain. We had to bring the roofer back again because there were two leaks in here last night in spite of all the plastic. I'll give you two more. No, it isn't worth it. Thank you to the volunteers, in spite of old guard people. They got on the roof last night at King's House 1. And worked in the rain to protect it. I said Sunday night I needed volunteers, if necessary, to stand on the roof and hold the plastic down, because the roofer could not fix it until the storms passed. A tree fell down on the ranch. I didn't yet know, yesterday or the day before. Everybody knows my wife goes up on a tight schedule. What I used to pay two and three people 7 days a week, 15 and 16 hours a day, to do in what we call the boiler room, where all the bills and everything is taken care of and the budget is maintained, she does with one person helping her once to twice a week. At fixed times, manages to stay, as she did today, we're ahead until next Wednesday, a week, that gives her the room to meet with Christie's tomorrow and with roofers and other things. And everybody knows she goes up there with a deadline of only so much time, and she gets it done in 2 days a week, maximum, usually one. The others spent 7 days a week and swore it was impossible to stay in budget, and she's not only in budget, she's under budget. And we are more current than we've been since the last time she rescued. And she stays in budget. But she goes up there, and instead of finger fooling the same piece of paper 40 times, she organizes it and gets it done. But she's on a deadline. Every one of the old guard members knows you don't get on the radio and address me or her. The radio is a one-way communication. I call them, they don't call me. They all know Craig Lamp's in town, and he's been designated with his cell phone 24 hours a day to be the first point of contact to raise a right now message to me. Plus other phones. I said I'd do one, I'd do two. An old guard member called the cathedral yesterday where I'm with the mayor. This old guard member knew I was down there meeting the mayor. Most people had no business knowing where I am. So right now, was this Plastic's blowing loose over at King's House 1. And we need volunteers. That was the right now. I think all of you will remember I said Sunday night, I want volunteers, all that are available, if necessary, to stand on that roof all night and hold the plastic. Did I or did I not say that? And this old guard member is the one who has the list of the names of the volunteers and has the assignment to call them. But because she knew we were down there, and the truth is, she was curious. She was just curious. Because she knew we were there, she'd been given the assignment to get some volunteers down at the cathedral for extra security. And the real truth came out later when the backup cameraman came home and she asked him, a new guy, which she had no business asking, how'd it go, because it was none of her business. But that's the old guard, the horizontal buddy system, infecting all the new people. That's why she called. She wanted to know how it was going. Perverse curiosity. If it was a genuine right now, and it wasn't, for the reason I will tell you, she had a duty to call Craig Lamp, who was with us and could pick the time to interrupt. And two more of my staff members that were down there with cell phones. But she calls and gets a brand new guy in trouble for not asking if she's calling with my authority. And created havoc using my rules against me by being a faithful right nower. Make your station announcements, all you people, wherever you are on shortwave. Do it right now. It's all time you get. It wasn't right now. She'd already been given the order to get volunteers over there. Wasn't it right now at all. If it had been right now, she didn't have the right to compromise the poor guy that's a new guy down at the cathedral by calling him, well, I got it right now, and forcing him to put his head in the lion's den to get on the radio and interrupt what we were doing. So-and-so's on the phone with her right now. Let me tell you why it wasn't right now. We immediately called King's House 1, and there were two staff members and four volunteers on the roof. She didn't even check out the true condition. But what grieves my spirit is the evil, deceitful, self-serving, sinful, manipulative, satisfying of a perverse curiosity, and making me a moving target because she was privy to the fact that I was at that location, so she is above the rules, she would use the shortcut and go directly to that phone and compromise another new guy. Back to Melissa. Today is her day to go up to the boiler room at the ranch, which we haven't yet moved because that's where I spent most of my time when we set it up. She drives in the gate. She's there less than 20 minutes. When one of the two last old guard people that are up there is on the radio,
Can I give you a report?
It's not the way you do it. She knows Craig Lamp's number. She knew everybody else's number. This is a different she. She's cut from the same cloth. Now, all the trainers are gone. She's the only person that can feed and take care of the horses and knows how to take care of the horses until the final six are moved, which this will probably motivate me to get them out tomorrow, whatever I have to do. Then there's another reason on earth for her to be here another day. So she ought to start packing. Which she'll probably do, and my wife and I will have to go up and feed the horses in the morning, load them in a trailer, and haul them where they're going. This old guard has held me prisoner because they've been smart enough to figure out I couldn't do everything, and they came in under false pretense with a dedication to this ministry and to work for me and to follow me, and they carved out a survival technique, and they think and thought I couldn't get along without them. Well, they were right. But I'm getting there. And some of you, the reason for telling us, why are you telling us? Because you would not believe, just as you would have been just as stupid as a disciple of Jesus, you would not and could not have believed that he would ordain Judas and send him out with power over demons. And because he's there, apparently started right at some time, he must be right. And if you would have found out the truth about him, you would have pushed him out and the cross would have come off out of schedule. You're just downright stupid, most of you. I've agonized for 5 years. You think Jesus loved Judas? Absolutely he did. You think Judas loved Jesus? Absolutely he did. Or else he wouldn't have committed suicide. He just thought he knew more than Jesus. He could do things his way. So I think I'm in pretty good company. And before that, I've undergone nothing alongside what God went through with Israel. But I ain't God. I got a human frame that cracks. And most of you are just like the people in Jerusalem that didn't even know Jesus was being crucified that night. The thousands that he had healed and helped could have taken that city over. They did nothing. All you have to do to let evil win is nothing. Because evil never stops working. She's on the ranch 20 minutes. I get a report. What are you on the phone for? Or were you on the radio for it? It's a no-no. It's an absolute no-no. Unrelenting attack, what I call the mom on the front seat of the cathedral syndrome, to where my dear mother could not come to church in her waning years because people would come and say, how beautiful you are, how pretty you are, how well you look. It's so good to see you, Mom. Would you hand this to Dr. Scott, please? Shortcut. So then we research it. A tree fell down, big tree, either on the road above, parallel to the ranch, or near it. I haven't yet gotten the facts. She told another guy who is one of the old guard that we still need, who sees me more than anyone else, he and this other cameraman, who saw me at least 5 times today, He was told about it, but this is the kicker. Bradbury Estates, where the ranch is a guarded community with guards at the gate of the estate community. And the guard at the gate told this man on my staff, old guard, who sees me all day long, that the tree was down and it was ours and we had to do something about it. Now my reputation's at stake. I don't live up there now. He saw me repeatedly today and said nothing. He asked Craig Glamp's number. He saw me repeatedly. This other woman that got on the radio has Craig Glamp's number. Saw me repeatedly. Swore when she begged to come back the last time that if she had it right now and couldn't get results through the normal channel, she'd be standing at the gate. No. The moving target will be there today. Wait till Melissa gets there and dump it on her. Now, what's she going to do? Saw a tree? Unrelenting and deliberate attack on the part of some of them who saw their little candy store messed up when Melissa came, who will not tolerate any longer, if she can stop it, me being taken advantage of in this ministry. I mean, it worked once. We reduced her to sobbing and Doc took her out. Maybe we can break her. Maybe she'll leave Doc. That's what I said last night, you know. I feel like I put Melissa in a bait-and-switch situation. This wasn't part of the bargain when I married her. For me or her. I married her because all she wanted to do was take care of me. Cruel and inhuman, self-centered, know-it-all, senior old guard staff members. Who abused the fact that they were trusted by me with indispensable roles in this ministry and have forced me, like the cutting off of arms, to cut this ministry down until I can start over, and I will. But I grieve as God grieves. Before I came to festival tonight, I had the two of them stand in front of me. You were there, Craig. I said, tell me one thing, guys. Tell me one thing that can give me any hope that you are anything other than the sons of Eli or those in the state of Isaiah's chapter 6 condition. You know what to do? You won't do it. When you're busted, I have yet, in all these 5 years of going public with this, to have one of them spontaneously fall on their face without being coached and say, against thee, O God, have I sinned. Not once. It's as though, not as though, they're in the grip of an evil spirit determined to kill me and this ministry, and will not face that truth. But what's worse, and neither will the rest of you. Some of you sit critical that I would openly bear this. Esther was a comfortable favorite queen of the king. Mordecai said to her, who knows but what you've come to the kingdom for this hour? And she said, if I perish, I perish. I can't believe that some of you that have feasted on the teaching for 20-some years are unwilling to give your life totally to God. You've heard my dad's visionary experience told. You probably never heard my mother's experience. You've heard me tell, Dad tell it, what I saw as a boy when he came out of the coma and sat up and said, Ines, I'm going to be preaching in, or Ines, I'm going to be preaching in 6 weeks. And he was. But Mom didn't have the faith to go. Mom's practical. Her dad pulled her out of elementary school, made her go to work. She was a working machine. I don't think I've ever known anybody work like my mother would work. And they were very poor, as you know, I've told you that. When the Depression, that's when I was born, the ends of it, end of the Roaring Twenties, 1929. My parents were itinerant workers, dragged in an olive box. I still drive by the olive orchard en route to Lake Almanor through Oroville, where they used to drag me in a box. I don't remember it because I was a baby, but I had it pointed out to him plenty of times. And they'd been able to buy a little house on the south side of Oroville. Dad was a deacon in the church. He was preaching, going out and preaching. After his healing, Mom would work. She didn't have Dad's vision. She didn't have his dream. And she just felt they couldn't make it. And she liked this little house. She had a dream one night. She was walking along a narrow path, like along a cliff, and there was fog along the edge of this path. And there were hands stretching out through the fog and arms. Didn't see anything but hands and arms. But she heard the cries of help, save me. And she finally decided she had to do something as a level place of the trail sort of leveled out. And she would try to get to the hands that were closer to her. And all of a sudden, this little white house materialized and moved between her and these hands. Now, Dad got up early and went to the sawmill. He was working a temporary job there. When he came home, I used to love to tell this on Mom. When he came home that night, she had given the house away. He came home to have Mom tell him, and of course, Dad, who wanted to go out, but still, he said, well, we could have sold it. She gave it away, this house that was between her and those hands. I don't know what happened to this generation. But people are not willing to do exactly what Jesus said when he went by the tax table, the fishermen. Look, Peter and his brothers had a fishing business. Peter had a wife. Follow me. In Mark's words, straightway. They forsook their nets, forsook the tax table, followed him. I got people following me that are half and half. They remind me of somebody that has their foot on a dock and the foot in a boat, and they're pulling separately. And eventually you can't get in the boat or the dock. You fall in the water. All I've needed for 5 years is some young people to step forward, some unentangled people, since nobody seemingly is willing to forsake the entanglements, and say, I want to give my life. And if I leave here, you'll send me away. And I only want to do one thing. Follow you as you follow Christ. No excuses, no explanation. I'll do what you say as long as I'm here. And I've counted the cost, and like the wife of C.T. Studd, I'd rather have it in the bank of heaven than down here. I don't need to prove things to God anymore. Nothing can make me happier than selling my collection of antique cars and putting it into Secret 16. The stance, whatever. My life is here, and I'm sure you can hear the ring in my wife's voice. Her life is here. All through the crises of the last few weeks, two or three people applying for work. To you volunteers that have stuck with it, there's about a handful, maybe 20 people in this whole church. No matter what the call is for, you come and volunteer. But we got a bunch of fat cats in this church that are standing by and watching Christ be crucified afresh through your pastor day in and day out, and you think all you have to do is pay your tithe, when if you didn't pay your tithe, you'd be a thief and a robber before God, and there ain't no way you're going to make it to heaven. You're a bunch of overfed, spoiled brats. I and God and those that are with me will whip this cancer this time as we did last time. But this church is going to leave a lot of you behind. I don't know where or what text of the Bible you're reading. You can stand by like Pilate and just sort of wash your hands. As the most honest pastor that's ever lived, lays it out in front of you with all the risk entailed, and you don't step up to the plate. I don't want any home run kings. I don't want anybody coming here with a rescue mission. I could make some suggestions on how we could improve things here. I want somebody that will come and march and keep their mouth shut and do what they're told. We got a new guy we're working with. Told him yesterday. He's like a lot of people I've dealt with. You got to be smart to know how dumb you are. There's no one more judgmental than a dumb ignoramus. Find me a more judgmental person than an ignorant redneck. The dumber you are, the more know-it-all you are, because your circle of your knowledge is so small, you got a peanut view of what you don't know. I will never forget as a teenager driving my Model A Ford down Meyer Street. It was a 35-mile zone. There was no pedestrian zone. And the teenage idiot of the city comes walking out across the road, and I had to skid my Model A to a stop, and he gives me the finger that I'm so dumb as to be driving on the road that he's walking over. That epitomizes everything about a dummy, a dumb beanzona. And the dumber you are, the more judgmental you are. And we got a guy, I don't know if he's going to make it or not. I told him yesterday, I ain't going through 28 years with him. He came in judgmental. You can just see it in his eyeballs. He evaluates everything you say to him. He's the kind that won't dig the holes unless you explain why. I think you were there yesterday. Get your ass out of here or get that attitude out of you right now, because we ain't going through it with another crew. Israel had their bones strong because God said, all you did was keep me on trial. Never once did they keep God on trial. They kept Moses, their leader, on trial. But to God, that was keeping him on trial. You better wake up to God's ways. They're not your ways. And you'd better figure out your ways are wrong. That's why Christ had to die. God's a God of authority. And he gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers for the perfecting of the saints. And just because the ministry is occupied with hosts of benzonas, doesn't change a quarter centimeter. God's plan and God's method. And when you got a right one, you better start acting God's way with him. I don't need any of you coming in here with an evaluative gear in the top of your head. If I tell you to run into that wall, you better start running. And if you break your nose, then you can quit and sue me. But don't ask me to lay the wall down before you run. Well, you wouldn't ask me to do that, would you? No, I really wouldn't. But you apply the same test to every little order I give you just because you don't see how it's going to work. I don't want you here. This is an army. We're in a war. And no army has ever won a war where soldiers did not understand, they weren't entitled to fairness, they weren't entitled to democracy, they weren't entitled to a discussion, they weren't entitled to share in the decision. They took orders and they did it the way they were told to do it. Period. No Marine brigade ever survived. They wouldn't follow orders. Now, it's pretty apparent to me I have to start over. This time I'm starting over right. And if you want to be right behind me, you better get going. I don't want your sympathy. I want your faith. I want your prayers. I'll go for a blood test tomorrow. I believe there will be a host, again, that will rise to this challenge. The tragedy is, it may be the last chance for some of you, and it's going to pass you by. It's criminal that I have to sit here and say, we still lack 44 reservations for the Sunday quota. Now, I've talked an hour and some minutes. It's your turn now. Get on the phone, and I'm really not interested in listening to hangers-on, nitwits, critics, and benzonas. I want the people that understand you've had about enough chances. It's time for you to put your commitment where your mouth is. Now get on the telephone. I hear from, I look like Gold Rush, Colorado. I sent a resume, middle of April. Well, that was almost a year ago. What the hell are you talking about? I worked for a 7-month commitment. I don't want any more 7-month commitments. I thought I made it clear. I want unentangled people or people willing to disentangle. I don't want any more 7-month commitments. I'm starting over. I want people who want to give their life. I also want you to understand you may not make it. It's about time people get the attitude. Many are called, few are chosen. the price I've paid to get where I am at the brink of death, and God's going to deliver me. You're going to come here like you're hoping you can qualify for the Olympics, or hoping that you can qualify for the before the cutoff for the NBA, or hoping you can qualify in the spring training for a major league team. You're coming here, and I'm tired of people thinking this or that. You'll get an education here you can't get at Stanford or anywhere else. I'm tired. That's what I'm tired of the old guard. They tune me out. I would have swam across the ocean to have an hour to get the droppings out of Paul's mouth. And I've had a bunch of eye-rolling teenage dumbheads that didn't have any idea of the treasures that were being dropped on their ears while they tuned me out in spite of what I say about listening, because they've heard what they think I want and they're figuring out how they're going to do it the easiest way without having to be bored with a speech from me. You're here for a lifetime commitment and a paid tuition, a working scholarship in spirituality en route to heaven. And I'm tired of being cheapened. If I were doing what I was trained to do, you would pay with your life and you would be arrogantly treated before you ever got there. And I might maybe take you on as a doctoral candidate, and then you would deal with my assistants, and maybe you would be able to sit down with me somewhere along your doctoral candidacy after you were a candidate to be a candidate, and then a candidate. And then I might tell you, you don't belong here at Stanford. Go find yourself some trade school. I am tired of being cheapened. I'm tired of dumbhead doctors spreading across the TV that never finished high school. As you build two-bit worthless colleges and give one another degrees. I have been cheapened, but not anymore. I would have risked death in my 20s and 30s after I got out of Stanford to receive the private tutoring in matters spiritual that I've had to beat into unwilling, unlistening subjects who had no concept of rewards eternal. I don't want 7-month commitments. I ain't wasting 7 months on somebody that doesn't want to give their life. I've already been down that road. You ain't trying me out. You're coming with the expectancy you may not make it, but you're going to give it to all you got. And if you're too proud to do that, you ain't even going to make it to heaven. So quit lying to yourself. Now get on the telephone. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I told you Sunday, this will tell you the state of the church that knows how to be abased and doesn't know how to abound. 2.5 years ago, I received this death sentence, and I came and told you on Sunday morning. The scan was scheduled for Tuesday. Results didn't come in until Wednesday or Thursday, don't remember. But I didn't have to tell the congregation to fill this building. They were fasting. Some of them fasted from Sunday till Tuesday. They were here every night. I went for the scan. Totally clean. The PSA was dropping 25 and 30% a week. I told you we would win the battle this time the same way. Well, I'm here. These people are here. I don't know how many fasted. But it's pretty apparent that as a church, we haven't attacked it the same way. Pretty obvious. Slowly swing your camera around, Greg, and let the onlookers, Greg's the only one I'm talking to, just slowly swing your camera all the way around, do a 360. You'll have to go about 181 way to get the voices of faith over there. Look at the holes in the voices of faith tonight. Not the voices, but the empty phones that are not being manned. Keep going. Look at the vacant chairs. Keep going. Will it go all the way around? Keep going. Look at the vacant chairs, folks. Now slowly go back. Go to another camera so you can spin around fast. They've seen the empty chairs. You be the judge. Not only one of two things. I happen to think it's going to be the second. There's only one of two things. You don't care, or because you witnessed it once that God healed me, it's going to be okay. God's going to heal me this time, so I don't have to get in a panic and put out. I hope it's the latter. I hope it isn't that you don't care. God's having to do this to me to wake you up to see what a presumptuous, comfortable bunch of modern Israelites you are, taking God and His goodness for granted. How dare you not be here? If I wasn't here, for all you know, with the speed of which this cancer is supposed to be acting, I could be unable to be here. Of course, you know me, I'll crawl in here. You're like spoiled brats. Or maybe you don't care. I hope that's not the option. Or maybe God's just going to take me home because I won't give up on you. And He already has. I think I announced Sunday the stress that you not being on the phones and the reservations not coming in and the empty seats that unrelentingly kill a caring pastor day in, day out, week in, week out, when so little on the part of you can count for so much. I'm going on. I ain't quitting. Some of you are not going to get in to continue to presume on my good grace. And ushers that know you and wave you in when you haven't made a reservation, you're going to get in serious trouble. I still need 38 reservations. It's unbelievable. Get on the phone. Now, I didn't finish what I started about an hour and a half ago. One of the newer staff members that my wife had to just calm down on the phone today when he discovered the condition of the cameras and the fact that we couldn't get the taping yesterday that we planned on doing, and he had a little fit as if he discovered something. Nobody cares. Not my nature to say I told you so. It's some of you new people, when you come thinking you have to make your own judgment. We tell you who the old guard is, you got to avoid them like a leprosy plague. You don't even say hello or goodbye to them. I'll tell you when they've changed. They're just occupying a spot till we have somebody that can take their place. They know it. I'm honest with them. I'm not manipulating them. But no, you come. Well, they're here, so they must be okay. And then you get conned by them. And then you act like you discovered the fact that they don't care. And then have a fit and we have to calm you down. You need to become a bulimic with stupid pills. Do something to get the stupid pills out of your insides. I think everybody knows. If they're old guard, they're no good. Period. And the first person on earth to recognize the first glimmer of goodness to spring forth will be me. And like the father of the prodigal son, I'll take 3 steps to that one to get to him. But I don't need you coming in here deciding you're going to evaluate whether these people have been crucifying me in this church are really what I say they are. And you stupid beanzonas, they want to charm you, mess you up, because you are the threat to their continued existence, and as long as they keep me from getting a new staff, they're still secure. This is not some game that's being played in the darkness. I'm hanging it all out for everybody to see. Why don't they leave? Well, I don't know. Sure don't. They really don't believe I can get along without them. And I can't until I get some replacements. But I'm eliminating enough things that I won't need replacements. Oh, you're looking at me like a bunch of dumb sheep that just had the water hole emptied. Every ministry has this problem. That's the only ministry that tells the truth. I remember when I was president of the fellowship, we were dealing with some people that were trying to play some political game, doing the same kind of trade-offs that France and Turkey and we'll let your troops in when we get $150 billion or whatever it is, $15 billion. I frankly think Bush is a jerk. He's going to go. He should have went 2 weeks after 9/11. Should have gone last month. If we're going to go it alone, just go it alone. The rest of the world line up. All this jockeying and stuff that's going on just gives more time for opposition. They made the decision years ago, don't remove the Sunni. The real threat to the world is Iran. The real threat to the world are the Shiites. The Sunni are the various kingdoms the Shiites are trying to bring down. And they can't express too much friendship for America or revolution on top of them. You got insane, fanatical, have not, suicide bent, demon possessed, martyrdom bound idiots. I don't like Saudi Arabia. I think the best thing could happen to Saudi Arabia is to emasculate all the princes. I don't like Saddam. He ain't going to hurt anybody. He's contained. We haven't found bin Laden. There's a hell of a lot more danger in Iran and Korea than there will be from Iraq. That's the way the world runs today. It's this trade-off manipulating. And I had one of them. He was a source of money. I was the president. I ruled him out of order and barred him from a meeting. Had some big pastor in the fellowship tell me, Gene, you got to be more tolerant of these people. I must spend four lunches a week, one or two dinners a week, dealing with men like this in my church. That's how I keep it going. Even then, I said, you're an idiot. That's not God's way. I don't have to compromise to preach the gospel. I may be a dinosaur in the kingdom today, but my Bible says few there be that go in thereat. And I'm in good company if all of you forsake me, because that's what they did to Jesus. That's what they did to Moses. That's what they've always done to men of faith. That's what they did to all the prophets. And that's what they did to Paul, who said, only Luke is with me. But I believe I'll find some more Lukes here. And I'm telling you, it didn't take death staring me in the face to make me retrench myself in what has always been my style in relation to God. It may have intensified it. This is the same man that came here 28 years ago, and you're going to get with it or you're going to get out. Now get back on the telephone. You know, I never met our mayor, but I like him. Not since Tom Bradley have I felt someone had genuine spiritual values and commitment to try to do what he felt was right for the city as James Hahn. I never met him before. His grandparents were missionaries to Japan. Most of us know his father. No comments need to be made. I thought it was a marvelous commentary as he left. His saying, Dr. Connor, says, call me Gene. He said, call me Jim. Going out, he said, what an honor to have you conduct the tour, and how amazing these treasures. I want to come back. But he said, I want to thank you for the spiritual refreshments. It doesn't happen often on this job. That said a lot about our mayor. And I'm convinced he's committed to doing what he feels is right for the city, not what's convenient. Not many like that anymore. That's why I like Willie Brown. Not many like that anymore. That's why you ought to like your pastor. Not many like that anymore. I don't want to spend this night chasing what now is 32 more reservations to make the quota. You're only going to get a song or two, because I'm going to the table of the Lord tonight. I came here to gather around the elements with you. So be ready at home. I want to go in this half hour. Maybe we'll go into the next half hour. We'll see. Depends on how you're calling. Get on the telephone. You know, in faith, we're about to take a step. You don't even want the devil to know what we're doing. We're about to take a step that could put us with the same hour format that we have in Dallas. 87 million homes across the nation. I'm not hunkering down. I have asked God to set me free from my dependence upon you. But I know he won't any more than he would. Really, if he's listening tonight, I'm going to ask him. Give me the same chance you gave Moses. Please, Lord, give me the same chance you gave Moses. But he won't. God gave Moses a chance. Get out of the way, Moses, and I'll kill all of them and start over with you. You never know what I'm serious about, do you? This has been my greatest pain since I came here. That's why I didn't want to be a pastor. Me and God, and now me and my wife and God, man, we could tackle anything. As long as it didn't get big enough that we had to need somebody else. But God has brought you to the kingdom the same as me. And it's really time to fish or cut bait. You've had it comfortable long enough. God will heal me. If he doesn't, I'll go out swinging just like I am tonight. And as I said Sunday, Peter had better duck because the follow-through on the swing will hit him somewhere if he's at the gate. But these could be our greatest years, and this could be a beginning of the miracle phase. Seems like we've had to have two or three starts for most of the things we've done in this ministry. And God can do it with the few. And that takes me back to the messages I preached when I first came here. Gideon was my hero when I came. By the 300 will I save. Got more than that. So we're going to not have another song. I'm going to the table of the Lord. Still need 31 reservations, but I'm not going to fight it tonight. It's your problem. You know, Sunday night, which hasn't played since Sunday night and didn't play Sunday night on the network, Sunday night I took you into 1 Corinthians 11 again. Spent more time than I ever did before and spent time defining the word translated discern, how you eat and drink damnation is to eat and drink not discerning the Lord's body. And I went to that tome, the Theological Dictionary of the New Testament, multi-volume and accepted by scholars everywhere, is the best compendium on the roots and history of every word in the New Testament. And that word has one of two meanings: to separate, distinguish, or to doubt. And it's rooted in the same conceptual base of using the mind to separate and distinguish. Now, when you use it with a critical attitude, that you're going to be the judge of everything, and you're going to sift it and try it, including God and His leaders and everything that God asks you to do, to see whether it makes sense to you, it's synonymous with doubt. But it's being used at the table of the Lord because those people that had gone through an agape feast and were just tagging on the Lord's Supper, some of them drunk from the feast, were not discerning and separating this bread and wine that is used sacramentally at the table of the Lord from just any old bread and any old wine. You had to distinguish it and focus on it and focus your mind in the realization this is the Lord's body. Why was it broken? If sin's the only issue, all you had to do was die. Because He took care of our sicknesses too, and the chastisement of our health, well-being was upon Him, and with His stripes we were healed. Are healed, Isaiah said, looking forward. After the event, Peter looking back, we're healed. It's not just wine. This represents the blood of our Lord that was spilled that we might have standing before God and be covered. I then went to Isaiah 53 and added the Syriac to what I've done in the past with the opening passage in Hebrew. And I haven't got time to write it on the board behind me, though I see one of the letters just over my head, the M back there. Oh, it's in a different word, different context. The Hebrew says, me, who, he amin, he amens, lishmu atenu, the hearing of us. The Syriac says, mean, with an N added, same thing, who, mean, wu, amin, same word, who, he amens, and they use the same word again for to hear, shimi, lish, mean, the hearing of us, with the suffix of first person plural. So both the Syriac and the Hebrew do not say who hath believed our report. Who amens at that level of faith the hearing of us? I didn't get into the Aramaic, which is what Jewish rabbis in those ancient days, going clear back to Nehemiah, would speak as they translated, as a targumin, a translator, what became the targums, the translation. They would translate and explain to the people, as I do, in English. They would explain in Aramaic what the Hebrew words meant. And I didn't want to take the time because they used so many words to say it. But the Aramaic is the same for the first two words. The same, like the Syriac, with the who, mean, And they say, hey, amen, who amens, but they don't say the hearing of us. They use a very unusual word that I didn't have the time to work with Sunday night. It's a word that has as the root, the Aramaics, like the Hebrew, three consonants provide the verb root and become the nouns. And those three letters are the roots that are the key to the meaning of the word. The Aramaic has a word Basar, B-S-R. Now, the ancient manuscripts didn't have vowel marks. Vowel marks, you see me put down underneath the Hebrew, and the Aramaic's the same. Little T's and little dots. And if I were to put the vowel marks for the Syriac, they have microscopic, almost minuscule, capital Greek letters that they use above and below the letters for the vowel signs. But I raced through the Syriac without the vowel signs. And you go into the dictionaries on this word, basar, or basar. If it has the little T underneath it, pronounced ba, and the S has a dash underneath it, which is pronounced like father, ah, you have basar. But if you have two little T's under the B and the S, you have basar. And one of the quirks of the Aramaic is the interchange letters, and both the Hebrew and the Aramaic have, and so in the Syriac and the Coptic, they have two letters for the S sound. Sin, it looks like a chicken leg upside down with a dot on the left side. Or the S sound, that looks like an M with the side closed. They're pronounced the same. So, depending upon the flow and the beauty and whatever reasons, archaically, they sometimes interchange the letters. That makes this word even more difficult because they interchange the letters. But the significant thing is, if the vowel is basar, it means good news, glad tidings, tidings that brings joy, news that brings pleasure. If it has two of the T's and it's basar, it means meat. Now, if you don't have the vowel signs there, you got to try to figure out whether what Isaiah is saying is as the condition for receiving the healing, who he amens the good news or glad tidings or pleasure-giving message of us, or is he saying who amens the meat of us? Unless some of you carnal people get lost, it's also feminine. That'll hit you about next week. Okay, some of you want to try to pun this. And only an audience like mine would try it or even think about it. And only a pastor like me would warn against it. Now, I thought about that. We're going to the table of the Lord. I don't have to prove to you tonight the King James is all wrong when it talks about sorrows and griefs and peace. The words are holly and macabre, sickness and pain, nagi, which is stricken with, worst kind of sickness, the root for leprosy, and the chastisement of our well-being. So the promises of Isaiah 53, of what would happen at Calvary, which are Now remember through these elements that we are to discern the difference between this bread and this wine and other bread and wine. And remember him and what these elements point to as the provision of the atonement. Healing of physical body, redemption of sin, and the only thing that can prevent God from giving it to you, who amends it? I can see the Jewish rabbis taking this word that, depending upon the way you pronounce the vow, means what. Now, what this Hebrew is saying is they would read it and nobody understood it. Me, hey, I mean, lishmu atenu. And I can see these rabbis saying to the people who spoke Aramaic, this means, mean, hey, I mean, and with the prefix in front being ignored and the gender and the first person plural ending of us. Just take the word that is the meaning, and these Aramaic listeners knew what it meant. To get all this, you got to amen the meat of us. Huh? Or the good news and the good pleasure of us. The message that brings good pleasure and glad tidings and great report and that which the hearing of which gives you good feelings. And then I traced it to the roots and began to understand why that the same word could mean meat and news that brings pleasure. If you're a hungry man in the desert, not overfed like Americans, they're talking about delicious meat that brings pleasure, but they're going beyond that. They're talking about meat that is masticated and swallowed and digested and brings health and strength and nourishes. They're talking about nutrition and its results. And trusting the results of that which is received. And I can hear a rabbi, the way they would reason, discussing with them what a needful, weak, and famished person would receive from the pleasurable food that the best meat, and they would have the frame of reference of the peace offering, where the sacrifice that is given is shared with God and the priests and the people after they give the heave and the wave offerings. So they have a context of this meat that is partaken of in the peace offering that puts us right with God, but then God goes further and lets it nourish in the strengthening way that proper food brings. And I thought, you know, language is difficult to dig down through the tentacles and find, but I don't think those rabbis were that far off. The hearing of us can have all kinds of meanings, too, and not really begin to penetrate when you just, okay, I know a new way to say it. But put it in the context of the New Testament, the hearing of faith. Received you the Spirit for the works of the law or the hearing of faith? Received you the Spirit for the works of the law or the meat of faith? And what is the meat of faith? It's the food of the Word. And faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. So, the Aramaic doesn't leave me that far out. It's an elaboration, which I try to do, and it opens an insight into what Isaiah 53 is telling us. These are the benefits when your faith rises to the level that you have received the benefit as though you've taken in life-giving meat and it nourishes you. It is good, pleasure-bringing stuff. It is news and a message of life. And the words of that, and by analogy, is being compared to what the food of life does to keep you alive and going. And that's what these elements are supposed to bring to us when we understand from the Word of God that this is life, this is meat, redemption, health, the chastisement of our peace was upon him, and there is healing for me. Healing that meat that forms the diet of this life cannot bring, but life-giving nourishment in the knowledge that my sins were not only laid on him, my cancer, my sickness. And as I take of this, in the same manner that I eat normal food for normal strength, I discern this is more than normal food. This is food that reminds me and focuses me on what Jesus obtained, and my faith that says amen brings it to me, and health is the result. And I take it in that knowledge and in that discernment, made whole. With his stripes, I was healed. And made worthy to receive it, because I'm made worthy by the blood of the Lamb.